up, speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, March 27th? Yeah, 27th. I know what day it is. I'm your host, Magnus Tiewald. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. And we got a great show for you this morning. We're going to start off with What's Up in Burnaby, your weekly roundup of news and happenings in Burnaby. And, of course, the big story there is what's happened with the planned waste facility for Fraser Foreshore Park. So we'll be talking about that. We'll also be talking about the start of a trial in the death of a Burnaby teen, and a fun production of Shrek put on by Burnaby North High School. So all that's coming up a little later in the program. We're going to be looking at Lyme and talking about brain retraining with Dr. Patrick Porter. So that sounds really interesting, all about neuroplasticity and how we can recover from injury and heal our brain. Really interesting stuff, important in so many different areas of life. We have some great music and the weather coming up in about 15 minutes and a lot more good stuff. But first, let's talk about what's happening in Burnaby. Let's talk about what's up in Burnaby. Joining me today is Srishti Gangdev of the Burnaby Beacon. Welcome to the show today.
Thanks for having me, as always.
So we're going to continue with a story we've been talking a whole lot about the last few weeks, the proposed green recycling and organics waste facility that was proposed to be in Burnaby's Fraser Foreshore Park last week. Well, we talked about it last week, how Burnaby Mayor had called a very short notice special meeting to take a look at this plan. And so what happened at the meeting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a bit of a whirlwind meeting. And long story short, it's not going to be going forward at Fraser Foreshore Park. And council themselves say that the public should see this as a win. You know, it did come after weeks of advocacy and kind of pushing back on this from the public. There were petitions signed, lots of really outspoken opposition to this, and that was a direct contributing factor to council deciding that this is not the right location for this project. So good news for the people who really didn't want that parkland to be undedicated.
Yeah, in some ways you could almost, it's a bit of a win for everyone but the waste facility itself. You know, with the sort of rising tide of opposition, Burnaby Council sort of showed that they were listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's good for democracy in general. I think that, you know, council can look at this project that previously all of them had supported and see that this isn't really what the city wants or what residents of the city want, and recognize that, you know, they're elected to represent those people. In terms of it being good news for or bad news for the waste facility itself, it does put it in a bit of a questionable position as to where they can go from here. Council is still dedicated, I think, to building the facility itself. They agree that it's good for Burnaby's climate goals. They agree that there's a lot of pros to the project itself. And now they're going to be looking for another place to put this. Preferably something on industrial or agricultural land. And there's not a whole lot of that left in Burnaby. So they're going back to the drawing board on where this could go.
Yeah, Mayor Hurley was commenting on that a little later in around midweek about just the challenges of finding a 20 or 21 acre parcel elsewhere in Burnaby.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to have to go to the private market for that. And again, even on the private market, those parcels of land are hard to come by. So we'll have to keep an eye on this going forward and see how long this delays the project or if it really puts a wrench in it at all. What I found was interesting was that along with saying no to this project on parkland, the mayor at least has said, you know, he's heard the public loud and clear. He's not going to be supporting any future projects that would propose to remove parkland dedication, which means that, you know, hopefully going forward, we're going to be adding green space to Burnaby, which already has about 25% of our land is green space. And hopefully that goes up further in the years to come. There was also a lot of talk about the alternative approval process, which was, you know, we've talked about this a little bit on this show about how people felt that it was not really engaging the public in the way that it should.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, in many ways, there were really two big issues here. I mean, it started with the waste facility itself, but people also seem to be quite upset about the AAP.
That's right. And, you know, if you aren't fully caught up on that, you're not to blame, because it feels to the public like it's a bit of this obscure piece of legislation that allows cities to do things like this. But basically what it was, that you had to send in a form in paper, either in person or by mail, if you opposed this project. And the city said that it needed 10% of all eligible voters in the city to send this back, or they would be able to go ahead with the next steps of this project. So for residents who aren't really, you know, engaged on a daily basis in local politics, it felt like they were trying to push this through.
Yeah.
And that's something that came up in the special council meeting as well, where councillors, you know, heard that and said there was never an intention to sneak this past the electorate or anything like that. And in the future, if anything like this comes up again, I highly doubt that process will be used.
Yeah, I watched the meeting online. If people don't know, all the Burnaby Council meetings are streamed online. So if you're curious or want to follow up an issue, you can go to the Burnaby website and follow along. I think they have recordings there too, if you miss the riveting action. And almost every councillor spoke about both, you know, what they heard from their constituents about the waste facility and particularly the park removal, but also people's dissatisfaction with the AAP. And many of them sort of spoke about how they really would not be looking to that process again in any sort of similar situation.
Yeah, and I think it just speaks to, again, I think it was Councillor Calandino who said that this is a win for democracy and a win for the public. And I personally agree with that. You know, if council learns that on issues like this, people really do care, that's a win for everyone. Burnaby has this reputation of being a city that lets local politics issues kind of go by. They're not super rowdy at council meetings like you can see in places like Surrey or even Vancouver sometimes. You know, council halls are rarely packed with people. And it's just, for me as a journalist, it was gratifying to remember that people in this city really do care about what goes on.
You think, I mean, maybe it's too soon for this, but do you think Burnaby will be looking at different and new ways to engage the public on issues like this? Because one of the things I felt, you know, as an observer that was lacking is, you know, this came forward and then council voted on it, and there didn't seem to be any real mechanism for the public to speak their voice to it and let both council and other Burnaby residents know what they thought about it. Do you think there might be any movement to maybe reform that or create some new ways that people can get involved?
So on issues specifically regarding, you know, the removal of parkland dedication or things like that, they're a little bit bound by the province. There's only certain routes that the province allows them to take. They have to gain the approval of the electorate before they do anything like this. But there's only a few ways that they can do that. The alternative approval process is one of them. And the other big one would be going, like, having a full referendum. Which it seems like the majority of the population would support in a case like this. Not necessarily the question at hand, of course, but they would say this is an issue that needs to go to a full referendum. And that would be treated by the same rules as like a local election. It would involve really making sure that you're reaching out to the public to make the referendum mean something, I would say, because if you're only getting, again, less than 1 in 10 people coming out and voting yes or no, it's hard to gauge what people really think about this. But that, again, speaks to a larger issue of, do people really know what's going on in their city halls? And it's, you know, I would say it's a toss up.
Yeah. So this council is right at the beginning of its mandate. Do you think they've been hurt by this, or how do you think this is going to reflect on them going forward?
Yeah, we're not going to have another election until 2026. They were only elected last October. So it's hard to say, will people remember this in 3.5 years' time? Will they be that upset about it in 2026 that people will say like, no, I'm not voting for anyone who was on this council because of this issue 3.5 years ago? That, you know, council ultimately reversed their position on. It's hard to say. The memories of the public are really long on some things and really short-lived on others. So I'm not going to predict either way.
Well, I guess the next thing will, and it may take a while, we'll hear maybe what future plans are there for the facility. But it doesn't sound like it's going to be easy to in the short term anyway, find a way forward for that. It's going to be a bit of a long-term look for that.
Yeah, they're going to have to find that alternative piece of land. I know that staff is working on a report on what they kind of learned from this whole process. So we'll be following it like we have been for the past few weeks.
Great. So in another story, the long-delayed trial in one of Burnaby's most shocking and tragic murder cases is finally set to start next month. Tell me about the background to this case.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those cases that just, you think about it and you're like, how did this happen? It's been almost 6 years now since Marissa Shen, who was a 13-year-old who lived in South Burnaby, was found dead in Central Park. And her trial, or her accused murderer's trial, I should say, is finally beginning in the next couple of weeks here. It's been delayed, I think, 5 times by my count. Lots of pretrial applications that are all under publication ban. So we don't really actually know the reasons for all of these mm-hmm. delays. But, you know, I find this case really personal because I live in the same area that Marissa did. I love Central Park, and just I know that a lot of people in the community feel this way too, that it's really shocking that you have to connect such a beautiful area with such a horrible thing that happened. I don't know if you know much about the case.
Well, just, you know, following it in the media. I mean, I remember when it happened, and it was, like I say, it was pretty shocking. And, you know, as a parent, it seemed, you know, unthinkable.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see how this case proceeds. Like I said, it's been delayed 5 times by my count. Ibrahim Ali was only arrested a year after Marissa's death. So in 2018, I think. It was delayed because of the pandemic, and then it's faced repeated delays. And the BC Prosecution Services told me that it's due to these pretrial applications. And usually what's at hand there is questions of what could be admissible in court. Not necessarily every pretrial application would have to do with that, but that's a lot of the time what's at question. So we'll have to see in the next couple of weeks what exactly was holding this up. And the trial is expected to wrap up by the end of June.
I don't know if you know this, but with a lot of the pretrial motions being sort of sealed under a publication ban, would you expect much of the content of the trial to also be under ban, or do we just not know yet?
It's hard to say at the moment. It's a first degree murder trial involving a minor. So mm-hmm. I would say that many things might be under a publication ban, but until we get to the courtroom doors and see what's mm-hmm. posted on the walls, we won't really know.
Okay. A little bit more of a happy story. A young teen cast from Burnaby High School, or Burnaby North High School, rather, is putting on an ambitious presentation of Shrek the Musical. That sounds really fun.
I put this on the docket for us to discuss today because I love Shrek. So I may be in the front row of this production. There's a group of, spunky young musical theater artists from Burnaby North getting ready to put on Shrek the Musical this week, actually, from March 29th to the 31st. And yeah, they're going to be on at Shadbolt Center for the Arts. And I think it's so fun to really support these young high school artists when they put on things like this.
Yeah, and the cast really is young. The young fellow playing Shrek is just in grade 9.
Yeah, and I was shocked to see that he wasn't even alive when Shrek came out, because I grew up on Shrek, and I took issue with his comment there of he didn't rewatch and psychoanalyze Shrek before while he was preparing for this. And I think Shrek is a work that really needs to be psychoanalyzed.
Well, this sounds really fun. Is the production open to the public?
It is, yeah. You can go onto the Shadbolt website and get tickets, I believe, and you can get them straight from the high school as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's going to be a good time.
I think so too. So what are the dates for that again?
March 29th to 31st, and they are all evening shows, I think. So it's 7 p.m.
Sounds like a blast. All right. Thank you, Shrishti.
Yeah.
Shrishti Gangdev, reporter for the Burnaby Beacon. How can people find out more about stories at the Burnaby Beacon?
Yeah. So please head to our website, burnabybeacon.com, and you can sign up for our newsletter there, and we'll send you all of this stuff into your email inbox in the morning. I'm also going to take a moment to plug our Burnaby Beacon Reader's Choice Awards.
Oh, good.
Because we're big foodies over at the Beacon. We love supporting the restaurants that, make this city such a fun place to live. So here's your chance as well. You can head to our website, click on the Reader's Choice Awards at the top there, and you just vote for your favorite restaurants in the city, whether that's favorite sushi or Indian food or pizza or what have you.
So the nominations are in, and now people can go and make their choices.
That's right. You have until April 12th to cast your votes.
Excellent. Well, I'll be going on there after this to cast my vote. Good. All right. Thank you so much, Shrishti, for talking to me this week. Shrishti Gangdev, reporter for the Burnaby Beacon. We will be back next Monday with more What's Up in Burnaby.
Yeah, we'll talk then.
Thank you. And What's Up in Burnaby comes to you every Monday at just after 10 o'clock as part of the Monday edition of Speak Up right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. A little music for you now. Jason Zimbano was the drummer and namesake member of Vancouver band Zimbano. Gosh, that was a long time ago that record came out. It must have been maybe even the 90s. Holy moly, I should look that up. He's got a new record out, and this track is called What's the Word? Thank you. Let's have a look at the weather coming up this week in Vancouver. Today's not too bad. Mix of sun and cloud with highs up to 10 degrees. There's actually a 30% chance of flurries over higher terrain this afternoon or late this morning, and then clearing in the afternoon with some wind in the afternoon. But the next 3 days are looking great. 3 days of sunshine and no clouds, highs up to the low teens. So that's for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Friday, things turn back to the usual seasonal weather with clouds and rain, but the temperatures are going to stay pretty mild at around 10 degrees, getting down to 4 overnight. So it's looking like a pretty good week. And, you know, we are, the sun is still out there in the evenings when most of us get off work. So great opportunity to get out for a walk if you're before dinner, or if you have the day off, get out and enjoy the sun.
This is Bird Note. Flitting from stem to stem, a yellow bird in a tiny black bandit mask sings with a voice many times his size. Common yellowthroats are one of the most abundant warblers in North America. They're adaptable birds, thriving in places that pickier warblers pass over. So it's easy to find yellowthroats in urban areas. Check for them in marshes, overgrown fields, and brushy areas along streams or trails. Many people remember the yellowthroat song pattern with the phrase, witchetty, witchetty, witchetty. During the breeding season, males may repeat the song an earworm-inducing 300 times an hour. Only adult males have those bandit masks, but females and young males have light brown backs and those signature bright yellow throats, which helps distinguish them from similar-looking warblers. To get a good look, you might have to look down rather than up. Yellowthroats spend most of their time among low-growing plants and shrub branches. There, they feast on insects and spiders on leaves and bark, or grab a snack from a fruit bush. Common yellowthroats are warblers that are skillful at living alongside people, making them a great introduction to the songs and bright colors of the warbler family. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
And next up, our feature, looking at Lyme. Today, looking at Lyme talks to Dr. Patrick Porter, who is a researcher, educator, author, and creator of technologies that use light, sound, and other strategies to improve brain function and performance. He's written several books and really working with the idea of neuroplasticity. Here is looking at Lyme.
We used to believe that once our brains were fully developed, they were unable to change. Science is telling us that belief couldn't be further from the truth. Can technology enhance our brain's plasticity? Let's find out. Dr. Patrick Porter is a researcher, educator, author, and creator of technologies aimed at improving brain function. Over the last 3 decades, he has been on the cutting edge of brainwave entrainment technology. BrainTap is his latest creation, and it helps people achieve brain fitness, overcome stress, manage pain, enjoy superb sleep, and improve their lifestyle. I am so excited to welcome Dr. Patrick Porter to our podcast. He is one of my heroes.
Hello. Good to be here.
Let's start with the basics. What is neuroplasticity?
It's the brain's capacity to do work. They call it neuroplasticity because they now know the brain is more plastic than it is solid, and it's in the form of energy or ATP that can be measured. So the more ATP or the more energy in the brain, the more neuroplasticity we have, the more capability we have to process information.
And how did you become interested in this field?
Well, it all started with my father, who was a chronic alcoholic. He got help from some of the church members, came over and said, Michael, we're going to teach you how to relax. And that started my journey. And my father became a a Silva instructor, which is a, he would teach on the weekends how to relax and basically take back control of your life. So I grew up at seminars helping my father, and then kind of evolved. I went to school for electronics and then into psychology, and I got to marry those two by creating what I have now, the Brain Tap system.
That's amazing. What is brain entrainment specifically?
Well, give you an example. When we listen to music, we know that we relax, and they call this the Mozart effect. Our certain music actually can cause our hemispheres to balance and start working together in a more appropriate way and actually make us smarter. But what we've shown with music is once the music is off, the brain actually goes back to its original state. What we do is we add an algorithm in there. So we're entraining the brain to change its form and function, which means we're going to change the way it functions in a learning environment by increasing the amount of beta alpha signal so that they can have more focus and more concentration. And then once they're done with the training of any kind, you can do this through binaural beats, isochronic tones, through frequencies, through light. There's a lot of ways to do this, this entrainment. But once you're done, you should be able to measure it up to 72 hours afterwards and see an effect on the brain using QEG or heart rate variability.
Can you explain a bit of the brain tap technology for our listeners? I know you mentioned the binaural beats, and I know the technology also uses the lights in the eyes and in the ears.
So what we've done is I've taken ancient traditions and created this modern piece of technology. I'm just going to give an example. We use light in the eyes because the eyes control 30% of what we're hearing. That kind of blows some people away because when we close our eyes, our brain prepares for sleep. That's just a conditioned response. So in order to get more of the brain to function and to train the brain, we're going to emit light pulses. Your eyes are closed, but it's going to work with cranial nerve too. And it's going to work the same way as a binaural beat. And how that works, if I take a binaural beat and I want to get an alpha signal out of the brain, then I'm going to put in a 300 hertz frequency in one ear and a 310 hertz frequency in the other. The brain is actually going to only hear the 10 hertz frequency. They call it a phantom sound. But our brain does this all the time. And what we found out in the 80s when I was with Light and Sound Research was, this doesn't only happen with our ears. It also happens with our eyes. So we've matched these two to create a superior experience of training the brain into what we call a synchronized brainwave or a symphony of brainwaves, because all five brainwaves that are the primary brainwaves, we need them all for different functions. So there's not a villain brainwave. There's just a brainwave that if they get out of balance, for instance, if you have too much beta, you might have anxiety, stress, and can't sleep. If you have too much alpha, you'd be a couch potato or a surfer, you know, either one, and you're not going to want to move and do things. So brainwaves are really important. So in the training of it, you pick out the brainwave that you want to train. For instance, in the morning, we have sessions where we train the brain to wake up. We call these digital coffee because they're going to excite the brain with more alpha activity and motivate the person to take action. In the middle of the day, when our temperature literally drops 2 degrees, because these bodies are designed for the Serengeti, it's time to go to sleep and take a nap, but we don't. But what we do with brain tap is in a 20-minute time period, we can do what we call a deep cycle reboot, a theta training, which is the threshold of sleep that very rarely do people get to, but we can train the brain to incorporate more theta, which is going to help people to have more lucid dreaming, to visualize better, to be more relaxed. And then at night, we can entrain the brain to go to sleep, because if the brain doesn't sleep well, then basically we don't function well the next day. So we need to get the deepest level sleep possible, also because deep level four sleep actually is what detoxes the brain. There's something called the glial lymphatic system. And if we don't activate that, we don't detox. And that's really important, especially